Once again, good evening. I'd like to add my welcome to those of you who are visiting with us. If you came here to hear Matt, I'm sorry that you're disappointed. Come back next week, you'll be disappointed again. Brother Lowell Salib will be in a gospel meeting with us. That will be next week. Matt will be speaking again in 2 weeks. So we'd like you to come back next week and then again in 2 weeks and whatever opportunity you have. And hope that you've been made to feel welcome here tonight. If you would, turn your Bibles to James, the fourth chapter. I want to look at James chapter 4 tonight. I titled the lesson, and I'm not sure it's an accurate title, but you know, I always give my lessons a title, whether they're right or not. But I titled this one, The Biggest Problem Facing the Church. And you're probably going to say, well, who's this guy? What kind of authority is he that he knows what the biggest problem in the church is? Well, this is kind of my opinion because I think what we're going to talk about tonight in James chapter 4 goes back to not only the church, but the world. I think he starts off in James chapter 4, verse 1. Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? We're not talking about pleasure and the desires for pleasure and those kind of things, worldliness tonight. But we're going to talk a lot about humility. Or the opposite of that, pride, is what we're going to talk about tonight. But I want to use James chapter 4 as a text for the lesson, so you might just kind of put a marker there, because I'm going to pick a few verses out of there, and then we're going to look at some other things in that chapter, because this kind of attitude causes problems between men. And I'm talking about in human relationships. The problem with humility, or the problem with the lack of humility, I should say, causes a lot, I would venture to say, 99% of the problems with mankind getting along with one another. Because I feel like I'm more important than you. My way is the right way, or my way is the only way that I'm going to look at. My way is the only way I'm going to accept. Whether you be talking about, and we're going to talk about relationships in the home, relationships in the church, whether you're talking about relationships at work, it doesn't matter. If we would have the right sense of humility that I think the Bible addresses, then I think these kinds of problems would go away. But I think the last part of our lesson tonight is the most important part of the lesson. We'll spend most of our time on this, and that is the lack of humility is going to cause problems between us and God. I'm afraid there's going to be a lot of people on Judgment Day are going to fall short because their level of pride was too much or their level of humility was too little, however you want to put it. And so we want to look at James, the fourth chapter tonight, and I don't very often do this, clearly for the sake of time. I'm usually too long-winded anyway, but I'm going to read the whole chapter of James chapter 4, and then we'll go back and start and pick some things out of it. Again, verse 1, where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask amiss, that you may spend it on your pleasures. Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you think that the Scripture says in vain, the Spirit who dwells in us yearns jealously, but He gives more grace. Therefore, He says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and He will lift you up. Do not speak evil of one another, brethren. He who speaks evil of a brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who are you to judge another? Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. As I said, I want to talk about humility tonight. first thing I want to look at, and let's go back to the book of Proverbs. But I think we can see from the book of Proverbs itself and a couple other passages that I've picked out in the New Testament that God's very clear that He wants us to be a humble people. If we look at Proverbs chapter 16, Proverbs 16 and verse 19, He says, "Better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud." Flip over now, if you would, to chapter 22 and verse 4. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 4. He says, "By humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life." And again in verse in chapter 29, excuse me, chapter 29, verse 23. There's not going to be anybody slower turning pages tonight than me, so you have plenty of time. Chapter 29, verse 23. He says, "A man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will retain honor." So the writer of Proverbs, thought to be Solomon by me and a lot of other people, several times in the book of Proverbs addresses the fact of humility. And I think there's a reason that God put that in there. Let's look on over to the New Testament. Look at the New Testament, Matthew, the 18th chapter. Matthew chapter 18 and verse 4, here in the first three verses, you have the apostles arguing about who's the greatest in the kingdom. And what's Christ's answer to them? He says in verse 3, he pulls a little child out and he says, "Whoever comes becomes like this little child is the greatest." He says in verse 4, "Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." So we have to humble ourselves to become great. And that's a concept that God tries to get across to us several times in the New Testament. We look at Romans chapter 12 and verse 3. There the writer just says quite simply, "Do not think more highly of yourself than you ought to." In other words, don't think you're really something when you're not. You need to realize what you are and what your position is. And we're going to look more at Romans chapter 12 again in a minute. Well, let's go back to James, the 4th chapter. And I guess the reason for this lesson, and I guess maybe after I got this lesson all put together, I found that maybe I talk about this a little too much, and I probably brought this passage out a few more times than I realized, but it's become maybe one of my pet passages, maybe one of my soapboxes, I don't know. But James chapter 4, verse 10 is a passage to me that explains it all. He says, "Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and He will lift you up." Again, we go back to the fact that if we want to be lifted up, if we want to be great, if we want to be lifted up and to be great in that last day in the kingdom of heaven, how do we do that? We don't do that by telling everybody how great we are. We don't do that by going up to God and say, "Hey, God, look at me." He says, if you want to be great, what you have to do is humble yourself before me. And we're going to look a little bit more later on in the lesson on what does that mean. What does God mean when He says that? To humble yourselves. But let's back up a minute. The lack of humility, as I said, can cause problems in human relationships. And we want to look at a few of those. James chapter 4 and verses 1 through 3 starts out talking about that type of thing. He asks a very question, "Where do wars and fights come from among you?" In verse 2, he says, "You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight in war, yet you do not have, because you do not ask." What's he talking about there? What's James saying? Is you have all these fights, you have all these conflicts, whether we're talking about actual wars or whether we're talking about just fights among people. You have all these things, but yet you still don't have what you want. Why? Because you're not asking, and you're not asking the right source. James says that's the problem. The reason you have these conflicts is because you're not asking the right source. You're trying to do it yourself. In other words, I am too prideful to go and ask the source that I need to ask for everything that I want. He says in verse 3, "You ask and do not receive because you ask amiss, that you may spend it on your pleasures." So even sometimes when we do ask, we don't get what we want. Why? Because it's selfish. It's selfish things we're asking for. We're asking for things for me, to lift me up, to build me up, to make me look great. When we ask for things like that, God says, "I'm not giving them to you." But when you ask for the things you need, then it's a different story, and we have other passages, and that's a whole other lesson we're not going into tonight. But we need to learn what to ask for, and we need to ask for those things in the right context or in the right way. But the problem we have is because everybody says, I'm more important and I deserve everything, then we have these conflicts. We have some people have that attitude. I am the most important person in the world. And the bad part is we have people teaching that attitude nowadays. We have people telling us that I am the most important person in the world. That's the society view of things. Is, you know, the big I, the little you. I am what's it. So we have that attitude in the world. And then we have another attitude that we kind of addressed this morning in the Bible class I was in, and that is that because I'm most important, you can't possibly have anything better than me because I deserve it, not you. So we have that type of attitude. We have those types of attitudes. And here James says that if we get the right type of attitude, and like I said, it doesn't matter what relationship we're talking about. We're going to address a couple of them in a minute, but I think about the employer-employee relationship. I hear all the time at work, employees saying, well, what's the company doing for me? In other words, it's all about me. It's not about the other 100 employees I have here who are trying to earn a paycheck, and if the company doesn't make any money, they all lose their jobs. What about me? Why am I not getting better taken care of? Why am I not getting whatever it is? You have that type of attitude in the workplace. It becomes a matter of, I am so prideful and I'm so full of myself that I can't see anybody else's needs or what they might want. Let's look at another relationship here. Let's look at Ephesians 6 chapter. Ephesians chapter 6. We'll look at a couple relationships that I think in the home humility can cure. And some of you, I think, whenever I start here, you're going to say, where are you going with this? Well, let's look at Ephesians chapter 6, beginning verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is a first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. Today, children have so many conflicts with parents. You see so many what they term angry children. You see so many children that just do not have any respect for authority whatsoever. And I think if we look at verse 3 of Ephesians chapter 6, and if we could get children to learn what this passage is really telling us. It says there in verse 3, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. What's he talking about there? What's the writer of Ephesians talking about when he says, honor your parents, obey your parents that it may live well with you? Well, if we can humble ourselves enough as children, and I still remember when I was there, you teenagers. I'm not that old yet. But you know, the attitude sometimes you have is, well, mom and dad don't understand. They don't know what it's like. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. You know, you read a passage in Ecclesiastes. When you look at Ecclesiastes, you see several times in there, there's nothing new under the sun. Well, that applies in this relation, in this instance right here. There's nothing new under the sun. So Paul, when he wrote to the Ephesians, was saying, children, obey your parents. Why? That it may be well with you and you may live long upon the earth. They've been there. They've done that. They've lived through those things. We've made the mistakes we're trying to prevent you from making. So listen to us. And it may be well with you and you may live long upon the earth. And, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where kids are so full of themselves, and I know because I was one of them, that I don't have to listen to mom and dad. They don't know any more than I do. They've only lived 20, 30, whatever, however many years that is, on this earth longer than I have, but I'm sure they don't know any more than I do because I know it all. Any of you have kids like that? I don't. It's obvious, right? But, you know, that's kind of one of those things that humility is one of those areas I think if we could get that in the home would help. In verse 4, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in a training and the admonition of the Lord. We as parents have an obligation too, that we don't
provoke our children to wrath. Well, parents, have you ever made a mistake? Sometimes we don't want to let our kids think we do. And once in a while, we need to go to our kids and say, hey, I said this, that you did this and you didn't, or whatever it is, and I was wrong. And if we never do that, then we have the opposite side. We have the kids saying, well, the dad thinks he knows it all. And sometimes he messes up and will never admit it. Ever heard that? Yeah, I see some smiles in the audience. I know. You know, it's a two-way street. Humility in a home is a two-way street. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, I'm not going to turn over there because I know I've talked about this a couple of times. But 1 Corinthians chapter 7, especially verses 3 through 5, you have there Paul writing about the marriage relationship. And Paul tells the wife there that she no longer is in control of her body, but her husband is. And tells the husband, hey, it's the same way for you. You're no longer in control, but she is. And I've taken this, and I think that it's aptly applied that if we'd take what Paul is talking about in the sexual relationship of marriage, if we'd take that same type of attitude and put it in the bank account, and put it in the floor space in the house or garage or whatever you want, and put it in, it nowadays so much dividing up the chores, or whatever you want to put in there in the home, if we take this same relationship, this same attitude that Paul's putting here, saying, my body is no longer mine, but it belongs to Jonah. And hers is no longer hers, but it belongs to me. And then tie that in with the attitude that he puts in Ephesians, Ephesians, where he's talking about the fifth chapter, Ephesians chapter 5, when he's talking about the husbands about the marriage relationship and how they're to love their wives. If we have the right attitude in our marriage relationship, think of how many problems we could get rid of just with humility, just with a little sense of, I'm putting this person above my needs. And if that person's doing the same thing, imagine the harmony that's in that relationship. All it takes is us humbling ourselves. Really, I maybe titled this wrong. Maybe we're using the wrong word. Maybe I should be using the word submitting ourselves to one another. In some of the passages we're going to look at, the words are almost used interchangeably. Another thing I want to look at, let's look at Luke, the 22nd chapter, Luke chapter 22. Luke 22, beginning verse 14. And that's obviously not the passage I want. Well, we'll skip that one. Okay. Let's go to Romans chapter 12. I don't know what I did there. Look, let's go to Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12, beginning verse 3. He says there, for I say through the grace given to me to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought. Let me go back and read that again. Not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function, so we being many are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. Here we're getting into the church. And Paul's writing to the church here at Rome. And he's telling them that we're not to think more highly of ourselves than we ought. And he's beginning to get into, here in the 12th chapter, talking about spiritual gifts. And the fact that one guy says, because I have this gift, I'm better than you. And another one says, no, because I have this gift, I'm better than you. And he's basically saying, hey, it doesn't matter. You're all members of the body. And we know how he goes into talking about how if all were an ear, you know, how would we see? If all were an eye, how would we hear? And those types of things. But the point is, we are all members of one body. In the church, we're all members of one body. We're no more or no less important than someone else. And sometimes
we get this attitude that I'm the most important person in this church, and this church couldn't get along without me. You know, I am just such a blessing to the Brownsburg congregation. I don't know how they were lucky enough to get me as a member. Now, I've never heard that said, but sometimes you see people and you think they kind of have that attitude. Well, here we're told we're not to have that kind of attitude. We're supposed to not think of ourselves more highly than we ought to. This congregation will get along just fine if I don't ever come back. I'm not going to, but this congregation will. And that goes for everybody in this room. Now, don't take that out of context. I don't want anybody leaving here. Everybody is just as important as I am, is what I'm trying to say. And everybody's just as important as you are. You know, sometimes it's real easy for us in, if you want to term it, a leadership position, those who of us who teach sometimes, those who teach class, who preach once in a while, maybe in elders or deacons or whatever, it'd be easy for us to get into a position that, you know, because of the position I hold, I'm real important. And so I'm going to push my weight around. Well, that's not the attitude that we're told to have here. We're not to think of ourselves more highly. We're not that important. Yes, we are important. You know, it's one of those things, you're important, but you're not. You're important, but you're not as important sometimes as you think you are, is what Paul, I think, is trying to say here. But let's go on down a little bit in this chapter. Let's look at verses 9 and 10, because I never did really tie this back in. But I think it ties back in to the beginning of the chapter. It says, "Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor giving preference to one another." That last part there, in honor giving preference to one another. When I was younger, I remember somebody teaching that meant that we prefer to be with one another rather than the world. And for a long time, that's the way I looked at this passage. But I don't think that's what he's talking about here. I think he's going back up to the verses prior where he says that we're not to think more highly of ourselves than we ought to. Matter of fact, if you read the NIV, it says, "Honor one another above yourselves." And that's what we need to do in the church. We need to put other people above ourselves. Let's look at 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verses 5 and 6. Beginning in verse 5, he says, "Likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you, be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble." Where have we heard that passage? Already tonight. Isn't it kind of curious that Peter and James both quote the same passage from Proverbs? He goes on, "Therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time." Here we have in verse 5, "Likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders." And boy, we'll camp on that, won't we? I'm older than some of these young bucks. They better be listening to me. See, I can say that now because I'm kind of in the middle area. But we'll camp on that part. But let's go on down just a little bit. He says there, "Yes, all of you, be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility." What's Peter saying there? That we're all to be submissive to one another. Yes, I realize that we're to be submissive to the eldership. I realize that we have things we have to do. But Peter says here that in our attitude of humility, we're all to be submissive to one another. What did he say before? That we're to think of others more highly than ourselves in Philippians chapter 2. We're to put those others above us, their thoughts and their feelings. We're to put those above ours. It's not always going to be my way. I'm not always the one that has to make the decision. The decision doesn't always have to be what I want it to be. Sometimes I have to say, I don't really like that idea, but it's not wrong, so let's go with it. Because it's going to cause Brother So-and-so a problem if we don't, as far as his conscience is concerned. So sometimes we need to submit ourselves, well, not sometimes, we always need to have that attitude of humility. he says there in that verse, clothed with humility. It's what we put on. It's our dressing. It's what covers us up is humility. It covers up all what I want. It covers up that I'm the most important type of person attitude. As I said, and I've already spent more time than I aim to in the first couple of points, a lack of humility is going to cause people a problem with God. It's going to separate some from God. And in that very passage there in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6, he says, therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. We need to humble ourselves before God in order to let him exalt us. Let's turn back, if you would, to Micah chapter 6. I found this passage, and I think this is a passage that just it speaks volumes on this attitude and this subject here. In Micah chapter 6, in the verses prior to this, here Micah is prophesying against the people of Israel and how they've done all these bad things to God. In verse 6, it's kind of their reply back. And they say, with what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body, for the sin of my soul? He has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? Three things he mentions that the Lord requires of him. He says, but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. If you look at verses 6 and 7, the things that the Israelites said, shall we come to you with these? Are not all these things, things that God had told them to do in times past? And possibly they were things they were still supposed to be doing. The Israelites say, well, what can we do physically, Lord, to get back on your good side? And sometimes we want to come to God, and we want to come to God and say, what can I do, God? Can I meet three times a week with a brother? Can I teach Bible class? Can I, whatever you want to fill in here, we could take that same passage and fill all these things that we do. They're not bad things, they're good things. But sometimes, instead of humbling ourselves and realizing that God gives us our salvation based upon our obedience to Him, we get this attitude that, I've done this, Lord, I've done this, this, and this, now I earned it. You owe me. That's not humility. That's not humbling ourselves under the mighty hand of God. And don't take me wrong. I'm not saying we don't do these things. We shouldn't do these things. But these things are just the tip of the iceberg. Because what God says to the Israelites is, but to do justly, to love mercy. Sometimes we as Christians, as mature Christians who know better, we forget all about justice and mercy when we have a brother who's struggling with something. We forget about those things. Oh, he ought to know better than that. Where's the humility in that? Where's the justice in that? Where's the mercy in that? There is none. We have to have justice and mercy, and we have to have humility before God. But we're not going to make it. We have to have these things. Let's go back again to James chapter 4. James chapter 4, beginning verse 6. But he gives more grace. Therefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. If you look back in Proverbs, the 3rd chapter, in verse 34, which this passage is taken from, he says there, surely he scorns the scornful, but gives grace to the humble. Now, I thought it was interesting that the word scornful had been changed to proud here. because so often that's what pride causes. Pride causes us to look at people with scorn. It causes us to look down upon people as saying, I'm better than they are. And God says, I'll resist that type of person. We can't be that type of person. But he goes on and says, therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. You notice something I've noticed in studying for this lesson. Verses 7 through 10 are all put together and all a part of humbling ourselves before God. He says we're submit to God. How? Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Draw near to God and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Now what does that passage mean? Does that mean for me to be a Christian, I got to go around with my frown so low that you sticking my bottom lip out and, oh, woe is me, I'm so miserable. I don't think that's what he means at all. But we have to have a sense, as Paul did, when Paul said that he came to save me, or save sinners, and I'm the chief. All the things Paul did, in another passage he says, follow me as I follow Christ. But yet Paul knew what he had done. Paul knew that he didn't earn his salvation. Paul knew that God gave him grace. God gave him salvation. And I'm sure there was many nights he cried on his pillow because he knew what he had done. That's what he's talking about here. That's what James is talking about when he says, lament and mourn and weep. Yeah, we have to have sorrow for what we've done. But yet, in that same vein, we draw near to God and he'll draw near to us. Verse 10 says, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord and he will lift you up. We have to go humbly to God and say, yes, God, I know. And I love the song that Kevin sang just before this lesson, talking about the fact that God gave us everything on this earth. This is my Father's world. Yes, God, I know it's your world. And I know you gave us everything in it, including our salvation. And there's nothing I can do to earn it. I have to be obedient to your will in order for you to grant it to me. But I can't earn it. I'm not that good. What about you tonight? Have you humbled yourself before God? Have you humbled enough that people can see it in your daily life? You know, a humble person doesn't have to tell people how humble they are. Little hint here. If you got to tell people you're humble, you ain't. Have I humbled myself enough in my daily life that people see that in me? When we're talking about humility, folks, we're not talking about a doormat. But we're talking about people who put others first. We're talking about people who put God first. People who put others first before their desires. Have you done that? Have you humbled yourself enough that you're obedient to God's will? Have you been buried with Him in baptism? That He might wash away your sins, that He might take away those sins. Not that you've earned your salvation in doing that,